Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions during this broadcast, please feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. I'd like to say hello to everyone. I've been away for the last 6 weeks on summer break and now ready to start up for our full season. I want to, before I introduce my very special guest for tonight, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. Our next healing weekend, we're going into gear this month, getting everything ready, sending out the notices to everybody who's been anxiously awaiting to get the information. It's going to be taking place in April in California, and I'm very excited about this. This is going to be our best healing weekend ever, and there's so many different exciting speakers that we're going to have and different workshops, and this is going to be in Orange County. If you would like any information, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Or you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and there's a link there to email me for information. And while you're on the website of gayhusbands.com, I'm very excited about my new blog. I should say our new blog. It's called Straight Wives Silent No More. It's part of my campaign of the We Too, to let our words get out, because people just don't understand straight wives and the struggles that we go through. So some of our women are contributing on a monthly basis to this blog. And if you go to my website at gayhusbands.com, you'll see the icon for Straight Wives Silent No More. When you click into it, you can click right into the stories and read what other women are going through. And feel free to send me your story. You can either do it anonymously or you can put your name on it, however you want to do it, and I'll be happy to post it. It's very therapeutic for our women to be able to tell their stories, because people just don't understand the pain and the hardship that we're going through. Although I can't say that all people feel that don't understand it, because I have a wonderful guest tonight who's one of our most beloved guests and most popular guests on the show, because people just love listening to her and they're being part of her network also. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my very special guest, Donna Anderson. Donna, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, Bonnie, I'm so glad to be here again. Thank you for inviting me.
Donna, I was so amazed when I first found you a number of years ago and your whole network for Love Fraud and lovefraud.com, which was such an eye-opener to so many of us and so many of the women who come through my network, who visit your website, who read your materials, who get your books, who find them so extremely helpful. Maybe you can talk a little bit how this started and when it was developed and how you came to do this.
Oh, yes. Well, I, like you and most of your listeners, I married into it. My first husband took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least 6 different women, and then later I found out men as well. And then after I left him, he married the woman, one of the women that he had a child with that was conceived and born during our marriage. And this turned out to be the second time that he committed bigamy. So none of this made any sense to me until I figured out, with the help of my therapist, that the guy was a sociopath. And I figured that if I didn't know about these people, because I was totally clueless at the time, I was a college graduate, a writer, I ran my own business, and I really did not understand what a sociopath was. And as I started looking into it and researching it, it was like, oh my goodness, I mean, this explains all the insanity that I've been going through for the past couple of years. And because of that, I wanted to alert other people to this psychological condition, and that's why I founded lovefraud.com, which launched in 2005. So we've been on the internet for 13 years now, and I hear from folks like you and plenty of other people that Love Fraud has been instrumental in helping people recognize what they're dealing with, and so that's why I do it, Bonnie.
I think an important part that I'd like to mention, too, is that when you met your sociopathic husband, ex-husband, you were in a good place in your life, correct? You said you had a business, you were educated, you're a very beautiful
yes.
woman, so you have a lot that's going for you. So would there have been any signs at that point of your life that would have triggered in to make you recognize this?
Well, the problem was I did start to see things. I mean, it actually didn't take him long to start asking me for money. But the problem that I had and that most people had is that I saw the warning signs, but I didn't know what they meant. In other words, you know, I didn't know that the bottom line problem was I did not know that sociopaths existed. I did not know that there were people who would pursue a romantic relationship not for love but for exploitation. So, you know, he was telling me how much he loved me. He was telling me how wonderful our future was going to be, and he just needed a little bit of help to get over the hump, and then we would be living in the lap of luxury. And, you know, he told me all this stuff, and I had no frame of reference to doubt what he was saying to me. And so for that reason, I just thought that I was doing my part. And, you know, I mean, he proposed to me very quickly, and I figured, you know, we were getting married, we were, you know, joining our futures together, and so I would do what I could to help everything go along, and then down the line, I would be the beneficiary of all our efforts. And never knowing at all that the guy was a con artist, I just was clueless.
Which only goes to show you that any woman can be a victim to a con artist, no matter how smart she is, no matter how beautiful she is, that these men are professional con artists. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. Anybody can be victimized. In fact, one of my other colleagues has done some research on this, and it's often like hard charging professional women who are the ones who are victimized by sociopaths. And the reason for this is that she actually did an analysis of what the traits were that made women vulnerable to sociopaths. And the first trait is extroversion, okay? And one of the reasons there is that, I mean, if you're an extroverted person, you know, you have a lot going for you, you like people, you like doing stuff, you like action, you like all these things, and often you could be, like, highly successful. And those of us who fit that description probably have had trouble getting a date. and the fact of the matter is that, you know, a lot of guys are intimidated by high-powered women. So what happens is, you know, you're going along and, you know, having trouble getting dates, because, I mean, that was my key vulnerability, was that by the time I met my ex-husband, I was 40 years old and had never been married. And so I was highly vulnerable to somebody who, you know, promised to, you know, be a partner for me. But anyway, so what happens is, you know, you're in a place where you want somebody who is as dynamic as you are. And a lot of guys simply are not. I mean, regular guys are all very nice and everything, but they simply can be intimidated by a high-powered woman. And guess who's not intimidated? It's the sociopaths. So what happens is when you meet a sociopath, you feel like you finally met your match. You've met someone who is on the same level as you are. And for that reason, lots and lots of professional and accomplished women get taken in by sociopaths. Now, the other two traits that make women vulnerable to sociopaths are an investment in relationships, which means that relationships are very important to you, and you know, you're willing to do what it takes to make a relationship work. And the third trait is cooperativeness. My colleague found that the women who were involved with psychopaths scored very high on the scale for cooperation. You know, and this works great with a sociopath because, you know, they want someone who's going to cooperate with them. And so that's exactly what happens. So it's these three traits. It's extroversion, investment in relationships, and cooperativeness. And these are the traits that make women highly vulnerable to sociopaths.
I would say that in retrospect, I have to really agree with you because I myself, when I married my ex-husband, who of course was gay, when I say was, he passed away last year, but I'm saying he was gay, but on top of that, he had sociopathic behavior as well as, of course, narcissistic. But I also was in a very strong position. I was a public figure of some sort at that time. I was a very strong woman. I had a lot of people who were working, you know, that I was overseeing in a group. And it was hard for me to find a man who was strong as I was or stronger. Mm-hmm. I was looking for someone that I could lean on. So my ex, of course, was very charming and very charismatic and very strong. And, of course, I mistook that strength for, you know, later on, of course, it was more than strength. It became a bully. But at the time, you know, I, too, was looking for someone who was stronger than me. You know, it was hard for me to meet somebody who was of my, you know, level as far as strength. And so I definitely can see where that would be, where the attraction is. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that's definitely a characteristic that, you know, for men like that would go for. But while we're using the word sociopath, just to kind of define it for our listeners, because a lot of times women ask me, what's the difference, and I would refer them, go read them, Donna Anderson's site, the difference between being a sociopath, a narcissist, and a psychopath. So maybe could you give a little definition there?
Yes, I can. And on Love Fraud, I use the term sociopath as an umbrella term for several distinct clinical diagnoses, and you mentioned two of them, psychopathy and narcissism, and also antisocial personality disorder. And, you know, the problem with the word sociopath is that it actually no longer is a clinical diagnosis. However, when the word sociopath was first coined back in 1934 by this psychologist by the name of Partridge, his intention was for the word to mean any condition, any mental condition that created an issue with social relationships, that the person who had this disorder tended to take advantage of social relationships. So that was the original intention of the word. And then eventually it became sociopathy in the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. And so that was, there was a term, sociopathic personality disorder, for a while. And then they got rid of that and they made it antisocial personality disorder. So a lot of people equate antisocial personality disorder with sociopath because they were kind of the same at one point. But now that's not the official term. And there is a diagnosis for psychopathy. There is a diagnosis for antisocial personality disorder. And there is a diagnosis for narcissism. And there's also a diagnosis for borderline personality disorder, which is somewhat related in the behaviors, although it's a different way that borderline personality disorder starts. So anyway, you actually have these four different terms that are all highly related in that the people who have these disorders, these clinical disorders, exploit others. I mean, that's what they do. In one level or another, they are exploiting others. So usually these people aren't concerned about themselves, or they don't worry so much, with the possible exception of borderline, they don't worry so much about, you know, having the disorder, and it's the people around them who are suffering. So anyhow, those are the disorders. But I use the term sociopath as one term, an umbrella term, to describe all of these disorders, because you need a word, you know. I mean, you try and talk about these people, and if you don't have the language, you can't describe what's going on. And it's very difficult to go, well, you know, the psychopath this, antisocial that, narcissist this, and it just gets very, very confusing, where the bottom line is that none of these people should be in your life. Or if you realize that somebody with any level of these disorders is in your life, the best thing you can do is get them out of your life. So in the end, it really doesn't matter what the precise diagnosis is. If somebody is exploiting you, you need to get them out of your life.
I totally agree with that. And I think people spend too much time trying to divide into the terminology. And somewhat like I tell women with their gay husbands, I don't care if you call it asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, metrosexual, anything that's not heterosexual is not straight. So, you know, you can call it all these different terminologies, but the bottom line is this what you want to live with? Is this what you signed up for? You want a man who's thinking about another man or just about you? So I agree with you. People, a lot of times they try to justify, well, he's not really a sociopath. You know, he has some narcissistic tendencies. Regardless of what it is, it's something that's toxic and you don't want to have to be in it. But maybe you could also define the fact that this is a mental illness, and this is a mental illness that doesn't get better. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes. These conditions are personality disorders, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's kind of different from a mental illness, because an illness assumes that somebody was previously healthy, okay, and then they got sick. So that's what an illness means. But the thing with a personality disorder is that it was always there, or at least once it comes to fruition. Typically with antisocial personality disorder or psychopathy, typically they start to kick in around adolescence, you know, because they're highly related to testosterone. So, you know, when people go through the, you know, the change of puberty, that's often when these disorders really start to come out. However, it's possible in some cases to see disorder in children as young as 3 or 4 years old, these children who are lying and stealing and callous and unemotional traits and all these things when they're very young. So the bottom line is that this disorder, you know, is highly genetic. So it's something that somebody is born with, and whether or not it actually comes to fruition has a lot to do with the parenting that they receive and the environment that they grow up in. So the conditions are both nurture and nature. You know, they are definitely highly genetic, and then they can be encouraged or grown, essentially, you know, by the type of environment someone grows up in. So the thing is, there was never health. You know, there was always this level of disorder. And I mean, I guess I've heard of some cases where, you know, people get these, you know, brain injuries or, you know, a spike through your head or something like that, and then it can cause these types of behaviors. But that's extremely rare. And the vast majority of people who are disordered have this genetic condition, and then essentially they grew up in an environment or with parents that allowed it to come to fruition. Now, that's not to say...
I was going to ask you about that, too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead. What's your question?
I was going to ask you that because I agree with you, a lot of this is certainly genetically predisposed, but I just wanted to ask your opinion. Do you think that a person in a situation like the women that, you know, I work with, who live with men who are living a lie on a day-to-day basis through so many years, that I really do say that in time, you know, if you live a lie every single day, it has to be extremely exhausting because just keeping up with these lies. But do you think that by living a lie day-to-day, that could that develop any kind of, you know, disorder like this?
I think that... Here's what I think. I think that the people, that your audience is probably dealing with one of two different types of situations. Now, one situation is that the guy, their husband, was authentically gay, but for whatever reason feared coming out and feared living his truth, okay? And so that's one type of person. But the other type of person is a sociopath. Okay. Now, with a sociopath, and, you know, it sounds like, you know, your husband may fit this criteria and others as well. Sociopaths essentially will have sex with anybody. Okay. And, you know, and the thing about a sociopath is that they just look at sex in a couple of ways. They look at it for physical release, and they look at it as another tool in their tool belt for manipulating other people, okay? So I imagine that lots of your audience have been in these situations where, you know, the guy seems certainly capable of having a heterosexual relationship, and then they find out that he's also sleeping with men. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's gay. It means that he's a sociopath and will have sex with anybody, you know, depending on what suits his needs or desires at the moment. Now, what happens with sociopaths is that essentially what a sociopath wants out of sex is excitement and variety. Okay, and that's why they cheat all the time. You know, if anybody's involved with a sociopath, there's no such thing as monogamy or a committed relationship with a sociopath. So, you know, for a while, like they will shower you with attention and affection if you're the new person because you're new. Okay, I mean, they're looking for variety, they're looking for novelty. So if you're the new person, you know, then they're all lovey-dovey and all hot for you, and the sex is wonderful and all this other stuff. But what happens with sociopaths is that they get bored, and boredom is essentially one of the traits of this disorder. So at some point, you know, then they'll start cheating, and if they've been going for women typically, then they'll cheat with another woman or cheat with another woman. Well, then after a while, they get bored with that. So they want to up the excitement all the time. It's like a drug addict that keeps needing a bigger fix. So then what they'll do is that they'll start seeing men. And, you know, not because they're necessarily gay. I mean, it's just that it's something different. It's something different to do sexually. So, you know, they're looking for excitement. They're looking for, you know, something that's new and different for their experience. And then eventually, you know, they get tired. They get tired of men, and so they're looking for something that's even more exciting. So they might, you know, get involved with transsexuals or some BDSM or any of those things. And essentially, it's just that they get bored and they're looking for something else. So that's one scenario. And then the other scenario is, as I said before, that they are willing to use sex with anybody in order to accomplish what they want. So if having sex with somebody puts them in a compromising position, and then they're able to make demands, then they'll do that. So essentially, sex is just something that, I mean, they like the stimulation of it, because all sociopaths like stimulation. But other than that, you know, it's like whatever. Like, for example, my ex-husband, you know, early on, he proclaimed to me that he didn't have a gay bone in his body, you know, like within the first week that I met him. He's just, you know, just talking like this. And, you know, then I found all these different women that he was cheating with. I mean, when I finally left him and started going through his papers, which I didn't do through 2.5 years of our relationship, had all this stuff in the basement, you know, and I was like, you know, I wasn't going to pry into my husband's stuff, so I didn't look at all his things. Well, when I finally did, you know, I found like 25 or 30 different women that he was involved with. But then, as I was going through the papers, I also found that he was soliciting male prostitutes, you know? Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, what is this? And he never struck me as gay. I never saw him, you know, eyeing up guys or anything like that. But essentially, he was just, you know, trying the next thing.
Yeah, I would say maybe 5% of the women I've worked with may have a husband in that category. The problem is with us, most of our husbands, I'm not going to say most of our husbands are sociopaths. They're not. They may be narcissists. Mine happened to be a sociopath. But he truly was not interested in any women at all outside of, wasn't even interested in me.
Okay, well then he was probably gay.
I mean, he loved me, so he tried his best. I mean, he really tried to be
okay. But
he wasn't. But and I think that's the case for almost all of our women. If you want to think of their husbands love sex with a lot of people and them, but it's just not. They don't want it with them either. So they want it with the men. But we do have some women who just don't understand, and I always tell them your story, that when it comes to a sociopath, men will sleep with anybody and anything.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and some women. You know, I mean, there are sociopathic women who behave exactly the same way.
Yes, we've met some along our travels in our group, unfortunately. Mm. You know, so we certainly know that there are sociopathic women and narcissistic women. So, yes, but I think that for our women that are part of this group, we're more worried about the men. I just wanted to ask your opinion. You know, we talked about sociopaths. If we go a little bit into the narcissistic personalities or, anybody within that framework, do you think that aside from looking for women like you who are strong and, you know, women who are successful, do you think that these guys look also for women who are vulnerable, who they know that they can, women who are always looking to fix other people up because they have enough problems themselves, that, you know, they're the caretakers, the nurturers, you know, women who are just
certainly
wanting
yes.
to be loved, and they'll try to fix somebody and they can tell it?
Yes, yes. The first thing that you said is the key, is that sociopaths or narcissists, all of them will target your vulnerabilities. Okay, and you know, it's whatever the vulnerability is. I mean, and this is exactly what they do. So certainly, you know, there are people who are nurturers, who are empathic, and you know, want to take care of people. And so, yes, that certainly happens. Although it's not always, I mean, you know, because a lot of times, you know, I hear from people, and I'm sure you do well as well, where, you know, people think that if you're like, you have low self-esteem or something like that, and that's why you end up with a sociopath. And I hear from people that say, I've never had low self-esteem. You know, I was doing this, I was doing that. And so the point is that everybody has vulnerabilities. Now, in my case, uh-huh. it was I was 40 years old and had not been married, and you know I was looking uh-huh. for you know a relationship in my life. You know, people you know have gone through a divorce, or they've lost a spouse, or they had a tragedy, or they lost their job. You know, whatever your vulnerability is, a sociopath will swoop in and you know make themselves out to be your knight in shining armor. And when you're vulnerable, you're looking for a knight in shining armor, and so that's what happens. But absolutely, you know, anybody who is empathic or a caretaker or, you know, always sees the good in people, you know, we could all be targeted by a sociopath or a narcissist, uh-huh. either one.
And I do tell the women that I work with that it's so important that after you finish a relationship like this, which sometimes takes a long time to finish, long after it's over, they just hang on and it doesn't get over for a long time in many cases, and especially when there are children involved. But you can't run out and start looking for a new relationship until you heal yourself. You have to be healthy to get into the next relationship, because I think that women really, you know, I understand the fact that they want to meet someone, they've been in an unhealthy relationship, they don't know what it is to have a normalized type of relationship. But if you're not strong, I just see this being repeated again and again, and I don't fault anybody. You know, I've been there myself when I was younger and going through all of this. You know, you desperately want to meet someone to love you because you've been unloved for so long. But then again, it's so easy, again, if you're not strong, to get trapped again. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The most important thing that anyone can do after escaping a relationship with a disordered person is to work on your internal healing. And uh-huh. your internal healing is always, always the answer. And often what happens is that, you know, if you leave a bad situation and you don't take the time to work on your internal healing, you're still vulnerable, and then another one comes along. I mean, like you, I have heard this so many times, you know, and you know, it's hard work. And the thing is that you have to make a commitment that you're really going to look at all the internal pain that you're carrying, because it's that internal pain is what these sociopaths just seem to have this sense of, this sixth sense that they know whatever your suffering is, and it's like a shark is drawn to blood in the water. You know, they just sense
exactly.
it, and they know that, you know, you're vulnerable, and you know, because they have no conscience and because they're able to do absolutely anything, they just, you know, tell you everything you want to hear, and then you find yourself you're in a worse situation than the one you left. So internal healing is always, always the answer.
For the women who are listening to this broadcast, not just today, but women listen for the rest of the year and the next couple of years, and Donna will certainly be around. One of the things as far as healing is, of course, knowledge and understanding. And so thankfully, Donna has made herself available through her resources, and I've watched over the years how they've developed, where Donna originally just had your publications, which were wonderful as far as helping. I know as soon as I saw you, I bought them to learn from myself, and, you know, about love, fraud, and all these different personalities and how they develop in your life. But since that time, you've done amazing things as far as having workshops and educational seminars, and you have one that's coming up, you know, in a couple of weeks, and I've been reading about so many of them, and actually I'm going to be taking that one for myself as far as being able to guide women as far as legal situations are concerned. Because this is one of the greatest problems that our women have, is when the end of a marriage and you're involved with somebody who was either narcissist, a sociopath, psychopath, all of them, some of them, whatever, disordered person, you know, having to go to court on how to find a lawyer. And I think that is so important. And you're having a seminar coming up November 1st, is it, on that?
Yes, November 1st.
On my calendar. Right.
Yes.
So
it's called How to Choose the Right. Yes. It's called How to Choose the Right Attorney When You're Divorcing a Disordered Spouse. And one of our instructors, Susan Schofer, is going to be presenting this. And Susan Schofer has been through this herself. She went through 5 attorneys, you know, in her own divorce, and because she was, you know, involved with someone who was a total narcissist, sociopath, and plus she had children with this person, so she was dealing with parental alienation and, you know, the effects of that, which are devastating. But she was, before that, she was a private investigator. So, I mean, as I said, anybody can get caught up in these situations. So she's presenting the seminar, and what she will do is, because of her experience and, you know, going through the 5 attorneys, and she has since branched off, you know, to help others. She offers the divorce recovery ladder, so she guides people in going through the divorce process. So through her own experience and through all her clients, everybody that she's helping, she has developed a list of 10 questions that you need to ask an attorney before you get involved. It's a way to interview the attorneys. And she has developed the answers that you must get from these attorneys to determine whether or not this person is capable of handling your divorce. You know, the fact of the matter is that if you're divorcing a sociopath, it is not a simple divorce. You know, there is no amicable divorce when you're, unless the person just abandons you, which kind of happened to me. But typically, if a sociopath is going to dig in and fight, because they often want to do that, not because they want you or want the kids, it's because they just want to crush you is the motivation there. So you need an attorney that really understands what you're dealing with and knows how to handle someone who is going to be as aggressive as a sociopath could be. And so it's crucial to get the right attorney. And this webinar that's coming up on November 1st, Susan will teach you how to evaluate the attorneys, you know, what to look for, what questions to ask, and what answers you should receive.
Which I think is so important, because many of our women in choosing, and even I had a woman yesterday who came to me who was very disappointed in her attorney. And she said, I have to find one who's going to be my advocate. I said, well, Dawn Anderson's coming on the show, and so I'll ask her to talk a little bit about this. Each one of these seminars, you know, well, not each one, but the ones that we're talking about primarily are $25, which to me is the cost that if you had to buy a book and read it, this is far more valuable. These are seminars that you can listen to live, but Donna, I did ask her if you missed the live seminar. They're certainly available after the seminar takes place at anybody's convenience. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. We scheduled the initial presentation, so the next one, how to choose the right attorney when you're divorcing a disordered spouse, that it will take place November 1st from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, but the initial presentation is recorded. So by the next day or the day after that, it's available online. And so people can take the presentation, you know, whatever their convenience is. And, you know, we've got lots of on-demand webinars that are available now. And, yeah, I mean, you can take it whenever you want. You could take it, you know, no matter what country you're in or any of these things. So, yes, they are all available at any time.
And some of the other seminars also, I see that by Susan Schofer, who's doing this one. She also has one on friend or foe in your custody battle, understanding best interest attorneys, custody evaluators, and parenting coordinators. So that's one that she has that's available. There's one about self-forgiveness, understanding and letting go of guilt. Your disordered ex, what you need to know for your divorce and child custody battle. This is so important. I have a woman right now with that, Donna. I'm sending her this. I already told her that you'll be on tonight. That I feel terrible. She was only married a short time. And her ex-husband now, he has his new husband, and they have half custody of the child. And it's a baby. And she said, you know, she had a baby, and now it's being taken away from her half the time. She didn't even have a chance for the baby to grow up yet. It's still a year, you know, year old. And she feels so discouraged by the law system. So I'm trying to get her to listen to some of these to get some help. So a lot of our women have that problem with custody battle. Here's one, battling parental alienation. And I'm telling you, this really happens to some of them too. What to do when your ex convinces your children to hate you. I mean, we have several women who have gone through this, that their children are alienated from them. And I think also this would be, that's a wonderful one for them. There's so many different wonderful seminars. Once again, they cost very minimally compared to what you're getting for it. You could buy a book that wouldn't be nearly as good as these live seminars are. Why it's so hard to get over loving a sociopath and how you can recover. And we talk about that a lot, Donna, in our support group, because a lot of us, you know, really loved our husbands, even though they were sociopaths, even though we were hurt, and even though, you know, we were misled and tricked and suffered, there's always something that's lingering there, that piece of them that we thought we fell in love with. Do you find that also?
That it's really absolutely. The thing is that once you realize what you're dealing with, you know, that the person is disordered, the person never really loved you, you know, the whole thing was a scam. And if you're still feeling like you love that person, typically what you're actually feeling isn't love, but it's addiction, okay? You know, because
exactly.
these relationships are highly, highly addictive. And essentially what they do, what a sociopath does, and by that, of course, I mean, you know, all of those personality disorders, what they do is they hijack the human bonding system. And that's exactly what I go through explaining in that particular webinar, is exactly how this happens, exactly why we fall for it, and what you have to do to get over it. And what you have to do is essentially treat it like an addiction. And what that means is that you go on the wagon, and on the wagon in this case means that you no longer have any contact with the person, especially if it's one where it was just a dating relationship. Of course, you know, when there's children involved, you know, there typically needs to be some level of contact, but you have to get to the space where you call it, that I call it, emotional no contact, you know, where you're just doing business with this person and, you know, there is no emotional connection. And it's very important to understand that this is why it is often so difficult to break totally free, is because the way the sociopath engineers these involvements, and I would say engineers because that's what they do. I mean, they kind of think about it, or maybe it's just instinctive, I don't know, but it's a calculated seduction. You know, they know exactly what they're doing. And so what you're feeling isn't a true love, it's addiction. And so that's how you have to treat it, like breaking an addiction.
And that's very hard. Sometimes you really just have to go cold turkey, and I know that people try it. But
yes.
I think I always tell women in my group, don't do as I say, don't do as I did, because I always look back at my own life and really have some doubts about things that I did as far as falling for this over and over again and keep hoping that, you know, maybe there was a good side of him and that was just a bad side that took him over. And I think we all fall for something that, is it not real, Donna, when we fall for it? Is you know, I always said, well, I feel sorry for my ex-husband. He had a tough life. There's that vulnerable little boy that made me feel sorry for him, you know, the side that I loved about him. But is that really a side, or is that just an act?
Well, it depends on the individual. But the first thing that I want to say is that your love was real, okay? I mean, you were authentic in your feelings. Now, whether or not the other person is authentic, if we're dealing with someone who you totally believe is a sociopath, then I would say that everything was an act. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I mean, in the cases where, you know, someone is authentically gay and struggling, you know, that's a different story. But
right,
when someone is a sociopath, and that's the reason that they did everything that they're doing, then, you know, anything he told you about his terrible childhood, or, you know, the crazy psycho ex that was before you, or any of that stuff, It all could have been a lie, because that's one of the core behaviors of a sociopath, is that they lie. Or it is possible that he did have a terrible childhood, because, you know, typically someone who is sociopathic has a sociopathic parent. I mean, not all the time, because it's genetics and it could be a crapshoot, but often there is a sociopathic parent, and they make terrible parents. So, yeah, he could have, you know, endured terrible things. But the fact of the matter is that a sociopath knows the difference between right and wrong. They just don't care about it, okay? So, you know, they don't have a conscience that's going to be telling them, you know, that, oh, you shouldn't do this, you know. They don't care that they're hurting people. It doesn't register with them. So, you know, but unfortunately, I mean, you bring up an important point. And the point is that culturally, we are all taught to believe that everybody has good inside and we're all created equal and everybody just wants to be loved. And the fact of the matter is that for sociopaths, none of this is true, okay? But nobody tells us that. Nobody tells us that 12% of women and 16% of men have serious personality disorders, leaves them that they do not have the ability to love, okay? And I mean, this is what the core of the disorder is. They do not have the ability to love. And when you think about that, and you think about that in combination with the fact that most of them have no conscience, you know, it's hard to get your arms around how fundamentally different these people are. And that's what makes it so difficult, and that's what makes us, you know, trying to say, well, you know, it must have been this bad childhood. Maybe they're depressed. You know, maybe they have low self-esteem. You know, we're always looking for a reason that we can understand, because we can't grasp that they are fundamentally different, that they do not have the ability to love. And so truly understanding this means that you have to get to the point where you recognize that their motivations are different, they are totally different from us, and that there's nothing we can do about it, that they are what they are and they're always going to be that way.
You know, it's funny, on my website at gayhusbands.com, that people sometimes misunderstand this, but this is exactly, I have on the cover of my body two personal mantras for you to repeat daily. The first one I have is that life was never meant to be this complicated, period. And the second one is, you can't fix a broken man, but he can break you. And that was not referring to gay. That was referring to people who are disordered, because many of us are married to men who are disordered. But I always say, we're always trying to fix these broken men. They can't be fixed, but in their relationships with you, they do break you. And I think that women need to realize that. Is that, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's the problem with someone who has a personality disorder, is there is no treatment, okay? There is no rehabilitation. You know, once someone who has these disorders is an adult, nothing can be done, okay? I mean, there is some hope if you start treating someone as a child, you know, which does happen, where people realize that they've had a child with a disordered person, and therefore, you know, simply because of genetics, the child may be at risk, and you have to be proactive in those situations and try and parent the child, assuming that the child is at risk, and hopefully you'll be able to head it off and not have that person turn into a psychopath. But, you know, once the disorder has set in and the person is an adult, it's not going to change. And, you know, for the most part, most sociopaths don't even want to change. I mean, they're perfectly content, you know, with, you know, not having to, you know, worry about a conscience. They consider it a liability that the rest of us have and something to take advantage of. So it's very important to recognize that we cannot fix these people. They are fundamentally broken, and the only thing we can do is minimize their exposure in our lives.
One of the things I also wanted to mention, Donna, is that we do have a lot of women who are part of our network, because by nature we are helpers, which is why men seek us out, but who need help. We have a lot of women who are in the social services end of, you know, their, you know, as far as where their profession is concerned. And as part of Love Fraud, I note also here that you have courses that are continuing credit courses as well, which I think is so exciting for women who are in human services or counseling who have to get continuing education courses. And they're also on your blog, like facilitating professionally run support groups, character disturbances, and all of these are accredited, correct?
Yes, we can offer, we are accredited by the American Psychological Association, and our webinars for professionals are approved by the National Association of Social Workers. So if anyone can accept APA accreditation or NSAW accreditation, then yes, we do offer credits for these programs.
And they're fascinating programs. Like one of the things we were just talking about, overcoming children's genetic risk for externalizing disorders. As you mentioned that, you know, when you're younger, that this is something that maybe can be changed around. Is that correct?
That's exactly what this program is. Yeah, that's what this program is about. Dr. Leadham goes through the genetic foundation of these disorders. It's a four-part program, and the last part is about advice that professionals can offer to parents so that they can help their children. So the first three parts of this program talk about the genetics and how it all evolves, and the final one is about parenting advice.
I believe that's when Dr. Leadham a few years ago was doing that survey. Am I correct? This came from out of that on, you know, if you had a sociopathic parent, because I remember participating in that.
We had a therapy satisfaction survey with Dr. Leadham. So, yes, that's what that was.
Yeah, so I'm glad that some information was, you know, gleaned out of that could be useful. So you don't have to be going for continuing credit for professionals to take one of these courses if you find this is something really of interest to you, correct?
Oh, absolutely. We have had some people who aren't professionals take the programs. They're understandable, you know, and the professors or the instructors in these programs do assume that they're talking to fellow professionals, but, you know, most of us who have been involved in these situations with sociopaths have done an awful lot of research on it, and so probably through self-education, you know, we know enough to follow the conversation, so anybody can take the programs.
Now, in addition to the courses that you offer through Love Fraud, Donna, you also offer so many other wonderful things. You have videos, you have blogs, you have everything. Can you talk about some of the resources for people?
Well, we do post a lot of articles. I try and post one every Monday morning, and we post like four or five or six blog articles a week. We have the standardized content, which explains what sociopaths are, and it's very helpful. We have the archives, so all these blog articles that we have got, you know, 13 years worth of blog articles, so they're all available if anybody wants to go back and look into it. We also have some videos that I do, and also brief interviews with our webinar instructors, and we have the professional resources guide, where folks who are looking for therapists or other helpers can see some referrals that we have there. So, yeah, we do have a lot of information for people.
And in order to find it, you have to go to Donna's website at lovefraud.com, and that's where you'll be able to find all of this information. Donna is certainly getting the word out. You've done a number of television appearances, and I watch you on YouTube sometimes. You know, it's always good to watch you and listen to you. I'm always learning something. Just when you think you know it all, you certainly can learn more, because there's always more to learn about people with these disorders, aren't there? Isn't there?
Yes, but the main thing to learn is that they exist. And so, and what that does is, once you know that they exist, it enables you to protect yourself. So here's the three-step program to protect yourself. First of all, know that sociopaths exist. Secondly, know what the warning signs are. And we've spoken in the past about the red flags of love fraud, you know, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath, which is one of my books. And the third way and most important way to protect yourself is to trust your instincts, okay? Because our instincts will always warn us of predators. I mean, that's what our instincts are for. They've been baked into our DNA, you know, since caveman days to warn us when a predator is, when we're approaching a predator or a predator is approaching us. And the problem is that in our society today, you know, we're not encouraged to trust our gut. You know, it's always like, well, you know, you have to have, you know, give everybody a chance and, you know, you can't, everybody has a bad day and, you know, you have to have evidence and everything. But the fact of the matter is that typically people will get some kind of internal warning that there's something wrong with another individual or something wrong with the relationship. And typically we override ourselves because, oh, you know, I'm just being paranoid or, you know, I really shouldn't be so judgmental or any of these things that we tell ourselves. And consequently, you know, we don't pay attention to the warning that we're getting. So that's why it's so important to understand that the people are out there, sociopaths are out there, and to know what the warning signs look like, because when you start to get this feeling that something is off, now you can connect it to your empirical knowledge of what the problem could be. So, you know, by doing this, by knowing that they're out there, knowing the warning signs and listening to your instincts, you can keep the sociopaths out of your life.
And that's the important thing, is to realize not only, I think you can add one more thing to your list, number four, realize that you cannot fix a situation that's broken.
Yes.
So before you even get started, don't look to say, well, I can make it better if I do this, if I do that. And in almost every case, I will say that a sociopath, narcissist, psychopath, all of these will make you feel as if you are the one at fault, not them.
Yes.
And that's where I think it's so easy to get manipulated, that they blame you, and you accept that blame in too many of the cases. And, you know, they start playing with your head and making you think. I mean, they don't come out to your – when you first meet a sociopath or a narcissist, they're loving, they're charming. They can't say enough wonderful things about you. So then when they start falling apart a little bit or start picking on you, you start really believing, well, I must be doing something wrong, because that's what their method is. They do the same thing to everyone, no matter who it is. Is that right, Donna?
Absolutely correct, yes. And, you know, this is the manipulation and this is the exploitation. And the thing is that most of us are willing to accept our share of responsibility for a situation, and sociopaths don't. I mean, they'll always turn the blame around onto you. They'll always say that it's your fault and you made me do this. You know, even if they punch you in the face, well, you pushed my buttons, they made me punch you in the face, which is ridiculous. Yes, but the thing is, you know, the rest of us are saying, gee, did I really push these buttons? Did I really do this? You know, and so, I mean, that's the way we are. And we cannot be that way with these people, you know, because they are making this up. They know exactly what they're doing. They're twisting, they're gaslighting. They're doing all these things in order to take advantage of us. And so, you know, when we're starting to feel exploited, you know, the sooner you can get out of that situation, the better.
Right. Look at those red flags. Let them wave in. Don't let them just wave in your face. Take it and run the other way. Donna,
exactly.
I can't thank you. It's been so wonderful having you back here. I really appreciate so much opening the eyes of women. I'm going to put it in our newsletter, some of your upcoming broadcasts, so that women can start listening to them. And I'll be, you know, listening in on the legal one because I really need it for myself to give good advice to women. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to having you back here hopefully again this year. Thank you so much.
You're
again,
very
Donna.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
And to all our listeners,
I appreciate it.
Lovefraud.com. Go look at it now. Make it part of your daily life, because I'm looking at it almost every other day. Thankfully, I get your emails, Donna, so I'm always reading. And to all of our listeners, I'll be back here next week again. Love to all of you. Donna, thank you so much again, and have a wonderful week to everybody. Good night now.